Welcome back for another deep dive. Before we get started, just a quick reminder, if you're enjoying these explorations, please hit that subscribe button. You won't miss out on future episodes. And don't forget about the show notes. We've got a free briefing doc there. It sums up all the key takeaways from today's source. Plus, there's a link to buy the book if you want to, you know, really dig in.
We like to make it easy for you to keep learning and exploring even after the deep dive is over.
Exactly. So today we're diving into, well, this is a big one, disruptive innovation. And our guide is Clayton Christensen's The Innovator's Dilemma. Have you heard of this one?
It's a classic.
It is. And it tackles this question that honestly has puzzled business leaders for a long time.
Yeah.
Why do good companies, really successful ones, sometimes fail when new tech comes along?
Right. You'd think being on top would mean you're ready for anything. But Christensen's research, well, it tells a different story.
It's not about being good or bad at business, necessarily. It's about the kind of innovation that's happening.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to get stuck in this loop of just making your product better, you know? Faster, slicker, more features. That's what Christensen calls sustaining innovation. It's important, don't get me wrong.
Essential, even. I mean, imagine you've got a software company, right?
Yeah.
And you're adding new features, making the interface smooth, keeping the performance top-notch. That's all sustaining stuff.
Totally. You're making what you already have better. But then there's this other kind of innovation, disruptive innovation. This is where things get really interesting.
Interesting, and maybe a little scary if you're not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because disruptive innovations, they don't always start out looking so great.
If you compare them head to head with what's already out there, they can seem worse even.
Think about when the first digital cameras came out. Compared to film, the quality wasn't even close.
Nope, but they were convenient, you know, easy to use, and that appealed to some people. And over time, the tech got better, prices dropped, and boom, film was basically history.
The whole game changed. And the people who were winning, well, they weren't ready for the new rules.
And Christensen, he talks about this thing called the Northeast Pole. It's like, literally, imagine a map. A company starts down in the southwest corner, basic product, small market.
They grow, they improve, and they naturally want to move northeast on that map to bigger markets, bigger profits.
Exactly. And it makes sense, right? You listen to your best customers, you invest in making things better, you make more money. But here's the thing.
That pull, it can make you miss what's happening in those other corners of the map.
Exactly. Those smaller markets, they might not seem worth it when you're focused on the big wins up northeast. But that's where disruption often starts.
It's like you're so busy looking at the big picture, you don't see the little seeds that could grow into something huge.
And by the time you do notice, it might be too late. The disruptors, they've got a foothold, they've got loyal customers, and you're scrambling to catch up.
Like what happened to department stores when online shopping started taking off?
Yeah.
At first, it was just a little thing, right?
Yeah, maybe seemed like a threat to just a small part of their business. But as online retail got better, more selection, cheaper prices, the whole retail world changed.
You know, a lot of those traditional stores, they're still trying to figure out how to adapt.
So Christensen, he's really emphasizing this Northeast pull idea, understanding it and realizing how it can blind you to what's really going on.
He even says sometimes being a good manager doing all the right things can lead to failure when it comes to disruption.
Because those right things, they can make you resistant to change.
You're so good at the current game, you don't see the new game starting up.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
So to avoid this trap, Christensen has some advice. One is to be really careful about how you're spending your resources. Are you so focused on making your current product better that you're ignoring other possibilities?
He also talks about how your strengths, the things that make you good now, they can actually become weaknesses when disruption hits.
It's like, you're so good at the old way of doing things, you can't see the value of the new way. Like Blockbuster, they were amazing at the video rental process.
But when streaming came along, that strength became a liability.
Their expertise in physical stores, it blinded them to what was happening online.
And this isn't just about technology, right? This applies to all sorts of businesses, even our own careers.
Absolutely. Any field where things change rapidly, you gotta be ready to adapt. Or you might find yourself struggling to keep up.
So how do we avoid falling into this trap? How do we keep our strengths from becoming weaknesses?
Well, Christensen talks about the importance of being willing to question your assumptions. To really ask yourself, what if the rules are changing? What if what worked before won't work anymore?
And that leads to another big idea in the book, this idea of creating separate organizations, little teams, almost like internal startups.
sometimes called Skunk Works. They're there to explore those disruptive opportunities without being held back by the way things are usually done.
Because trying to force those new ideas into your existing structure, it's just not going to work.
It's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. These separate teams, they have the freedom to experiment, to take risks. They operate differently, even their costs are structured differently.
And that's crucial because the way you measure success in a disruptive market, it's not the same as in your established market.
Right, the goals are different. And Christensen have this great example, IBM and personal computers. They knew the PC market was different from their mainframe business.
Totally different customers, different needs.
So they set up a completely separate unit down in Boca Raton, Florida. It was like a startup inside the bigger company. And it worked.
They gave that team the freedom to do things their own way. Yeah. And that's why they were able to grab a big chunk of that growing PC market.
And this idea, it applies to businesses of all sizes. Even if you're not IBM, you can still create that kind of space within your own team.
Give people the freedom to try new things without being bogged down by the "this is how we've always done it" mentality.
Exactly. Because you never know where that next great idea is going to come from.
And that's what we're going to keep exploring as we go deeper into the innovator's dilemma. Stay tuned.
And that's just scratching the surface, really. Christensen goes even deeper into the mechanics of how this disruption thing actually works.
And there's this one idea I found it super interesting. It's this idea that companies, sometimes they actually give customers too much, more than they need or even want.
Performance oversupply, he calls it. And it can be a real problem.
Yeah, like think of a fancy restaurant. You know, 10-course pasting menu, all these crazy ingredients. Some people love that.
But if you just want a good meal, it's way too much.
Total overkill. And that's where a disruptor can sneak in. Maybe a food truck that just makes simple, tasty food way cheaper.
Exactly. And that fancy restaurant, suddenly it looks out of touch. Like they're not getting it. Christensen uses this example, the mechanical excavator industry.
Excavators.
Yeah, big construction equipment. Big companies, they were obsessed with making these massive, powerful excavators. But
they missed something.
They created a gap. Smaller companies started making these smaller, more affordable excavators, perfect for like landscaping or home projects.
It's not always about being the best, right? It's about understanding what people actually need.
And being willing to meet that need, even if it means making something simpler, not the fanciest, most expensive thing.
It makes me think of like those early smartphones. They weren't super powerful at first.
No, but they were easy to use, did what you needed, and they were convenient.
And that convenience, that's a big deal. And over time, those simpler phones, they got better, they moved up market.
That's another important concept Christensen talks about, this buying hierarchy. It's not just about features, it's a whole process.
Like levels of what customers care about.
Yeah, first, does it even work? Does it do the basic job? Then, is it reliable? Then they start thinking about how easy it is to use, the convenience.
And finally, price. If all those other things are good, then price matters.
And disruptive stuff, it often wins on those lower levels. First, it works, it's reliable, it's easy. Maybe not the cheapest or the most powerful, but
it gets the job done, and it's easy to use. That's appealing to a lot of people. So we got to be aware of this hierarchy, right?
Yeah.
Where does our product fit in?
Are we giving people more than they need? More features, more power, when maybe they just want something simple and reliable?
If you're not careful, you're leaving space for a disruptor to come in and say, "Hey, I've got what you actually need."
And it might not be as fancy, but it gets the job done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, challenge those assumptions. Really think about what your customers value.
And Christensen has this whole thing about discovery-driven planning, which sounds kind of complicated.
It's not about throwing out your plans completely. It's more like admitting you don't know everything, especially when disruption is involved.
You can't predict the future perfectly.
Nope. Got to be willing to learn as you go. Change your plans when you need to.
Like, imagine you're exploring a new place. Right. You have a map, but you might have to make detours, find new paths you didn't expect.
Exactly. The discovery part is about doing experiments, getting data, and using that to decide what to do next.
Not just sticking to the original plan no matter what.
And he has this tool, the assumption checklist. It's basically a way to list out all the things you're assuming about your business.
Like who your customers are, what they want, how you're going to reach them.
Yeah, and then figure out how to test those assumptions, see if they're actually true.
Because the goal isn't to be right all the time. It's to learn as quickly as you can, especially when the rules are changing all the time.
And Christensen tells this story about Intel, back in the 80s, they were huge in microprocessors, and they thought they could do the same thing with memory chips.
But it didn't work out.
It was a totally different market. The competition was brutal, the margins were tiny, and Intel, they were so stuck in their old ways of thinking.
They couldn't adapt fast enough.
And they ended up having to get out of that market entirely.
Ouch. So that's the lesson right there. Don't cling too tightly to your assumptions, especially when you're trying something new.
Be open to learning. Be willing to change direction. That's what discovery-driven planning is all about.
So how do we actually do this? How do we bring this mindset into our own work?
Well, it starts with encouraging people to be curious, to ask questions, challenge the way things are done.
Create a space where people feel safe sharing new ideas, even if they sound a little crazy.
Exactly. Because sometimes the best ideas, they come from the most unexpected places. You don't have all the answers, so be open to hearing from other people.
Don't just assume you know best.
For except. And then, once you have those ideas, don't just let them sit there. Test them. Run experiments, gather data, let the results guide your decisions.
It's like shifting from a we-know-everything mindset to a we're-always-learning mindset.
And that can be tough, especially for companies that are used to being in control, doing things a certain way, but...
In today's world, things change so fast, you have to be able to learn and adapt.
The innovator's dilemma, it's all about giving us the tools to do that, to navigate this whole disruption thing and come out stronger on the other side.
Now, there's this idea in the book that's kind of mind-blowing. It's that sometimes the companies that are the most successful, they're actually the most vulnerable to disruption.
It's kind of paradoxical, right? But it makes sense when you think about it.
Because they're so focused on what's working now.
Yeah, they're listening to their best customers, making their existing business as efficient as possible. But
that can make them miss what's happening on the edges.
Exactly. They miss the new trends, the new technologies that might seem small at first, but they have the potential to change everything. And Christensen uses this great example, Seagate technology. Back in the 80s, they were the company for hard disk drive.
They were doing everything right, right?
Yeah, they were listening to their customers, investing in R&D, they were innovating. But they completely missed this new thing, the 3.5-inch hard disk drive.
What, like the ones on laptops?
Exactly. At the time, everyone was focused on desktop computers, and they wanted bigger, more powerful drives. The 3.5-inch, it seemed too small, too niche.
They thought it wasn't going to go anywhere.
But of course it did. It became the standard for laptops, and that changed everything. And Seagate, they missed out.
So it wasn't that they were a bad company. It was that their success in the old market blinded them to the new one.
Their focus on those big drives, their relationships with those desktop computer companies, it all became a liability.
Wow. It's like the things that made them strong in one era made them weak in the next.
It happens all the time. Like, think about the music industry. The big record labels, they were so focused on selling physical albums.
Through record stores.
Yeah, that when digital downloads and streaming came along, they resisted it. They saw it as a threat.
And they were slow to adapt.
And new companies like Apple and Spotify, they jumped right in, and the record labels lost a lot of ground.
So the lesson is, even if you're at the top, you can't get complacent. Yeah. You got to be looking for those disruptive innovations, be ready to change.
And Christensen talks about agnostic learning, which is basically being open to learning from anyone, anywhere.
Anyone. So not just your boss or the experts.
No. It's about listening to the people on the front lines, the ones closest to the customer.
Because they might be the first to see those signs of change.
Exactly. They might notice things that seem small but could be a big deal down the road. And it's not enough to just listen to them. You got to empower them to act.
Give them the freedom to experiment. To take some risks.
Because those disruptive ideas, they often start small. They might not fit neatly into the way you do things now. You need to create a space where they can grow.
And he tells this story about Honda when they were trying to break into the U.S. motorcycle market. At first, they were focused on those big, powerful bikes.
Trying to compete with Harley Davidson and those guys.
But it wasn't working. Those bikes were expensive, not as reliable. They didn't really appeal to the average American.
But then something interesting happened. The Honda employees who were over here, they started riding around on these little 50cc Super Cub bikes.
Like the ones they sold in Japan.
Yep, just to get around town. But people started noticing them, asking about them.
They liked them.
They loved them. They were small, easy to ride, and cheap. And instead of ignoring this, the Honda guys, they were like, huh, maybe there's something here.
They were open to learning.
Exactly. And they had the freedom to act on it. They started importing those Super Cubs, marketing them to a wider audience.
And it was a huge hit.
The The Super Cub, it became this iconic bike, and it helped Honda become a major player in the US market. And it all started because they were willing to listen, to learn from something unexpected, and to change their strategy.
That's a powerful lesson. You got to be open to those unexpected opportunities.
The companies that succeed when disruption hits, they're the ones who are humble, who are curious, and who listen to everyone, not just the people at the top.
They create a culture where anyone can contribute, where anyone can have a good idea. It's all about being willing to shift gears, even if it means changing what you thought you knew.
And it's not just about listening to what other people are saying. It's about being willing to question your own beliefs. Like the deep down assumptions about how your business works, how the whole industry works.
Because those are the ones that can really trip you up, the assumptions you don't even realize you're making.
Exactly. And Christensen, he has this framework to help us uncover those assumptions. He calls it the Resources, Processes, Values Framework, or RPV for short.
Okay, RPV. Break it down for us. What are those things and how do they relate to this whole disruption thing?
So, resources, those are the tangible things your company has. Money, equipment, technology, the people, all of that.
Makes sense. What about processes?
Processes are the ways you do things, the steps, the procedures, how you make decisions, how you develop products, all the systems you have in place.
Okay, got it. And then values. That's a bit more like philosophical.
Yeah, values are the core beliefs that guide your company, the things you prioritize. Customer focus, innovation, making a profit, treating employees well, those kinds of things.
Okay, so we've got the three pieces: resources, processes, values.
Yeah.
How does this help us with disruptive innovation?
Well, Christensen's point is that companies, they're really good at using their RPV to handle sustaining innovations, those little improvements, making things better, faster, cheaper.
Right, that's what good companies do.
But when something disruptive comes along, that same RPV, it can actually hold you back.
Because it's all geared towards the old way of doing things.
Exactly. Think about Seagate again. They had all their resources focused on making those big, powerful drives. Their processes were all set up to serve those desktop computer companies. And their values, well, they were all about dominating that market, making the most profit.
So when the 3.5-inch drive came along, it just didn't compute.
Nope. Their whole system was built for a different world, and that made them blind to the opportunity.
So how do we use this RPV idea to make sure we don't make the same mistake?
Yeah. Well, step one is to just be aware of your own RPV. Like, really sit down and think about it. What resources do we rely on? What are our core processes? What are the values that drive everything we do?
And then.
Then, when something new comes along, something that might be disruptive, ask yourself, does this challenge our RPV? Does it require different resources, different processes? Does it go against our values?
The answer is yes.
Then you got to be ready to adapt. Maybe you need to shift resources, create new processes. You might even have to rethink some of your core values.
That's tough, though, right?
Right.
Especially for a big company that's used to doing things a certain way.
It is. It takes courage to change, to embrace uncertainty. Sometimes it means you have to, like, disrupt yourself before someone else does it to you.
Cannibalize your own business, almost.
Yeah. But the companies that can do that, those are the ones that survive and thrive. They're the ones that shape the future.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive into the innovator's dilemma, I think the big takeaway is this: disruption is going to happen. We can't stop it.
But we don't have to be victims of it.
Right. If we understand it, if we're willing to learn and change, disruption can actually be a good thing. It can be a force for progress.
Absolutely. It's about making sure we're the ones driving that change, not being swept away by it.
And for all of you listening, if you want to keep learning about this, if you want to share your own thoughts, come join the conversation in our online community. You'll find the link in the show notes.
We love hearing from you.
We do. And one last thought before we go. Think about what Christensen said about performance over supply. Look at your own industry, your own company. Are you giving customers more than they actually need? More features, more complexity? Because that might be creating an opening for a disruptor to come in and offer something simpler, something better suited to what people actually want. Something to think about. Until next time, keep diving deep.